Hello, Ledbury.
It's really lovely to be here and absolutely delighted to be reading with a superb poet like Liz Berry. It's just such a delight to be reading with a fellow Midlander as well. And a huge thank you to Blood Axe and to Neil Astley for their support of my poetry and for publishing Assembly Lines. I'm going to begin with a poem called Midland's Kids. Midland's kids, we were raised in cars, grew up on the back seats of the long-gone marks of British manufacturing, Morris, Austin's and Talbot's, slightly crap, even new. Third or fourth hand, pockmarked, and in summer distinguished by the waft of hot leatherette, the oil-black tang of the four-star fumes and the rust-red frothing of a Haddit head gasket that had sent the radiator broiling over. Those people we once thought to be then, misplaced down the gap in the back seat that so ingeniously folded forward, or left tucked like secrets in the chrome pop-out passenger ashtrays, just as each promised holiday and magical mystery tour silvered in the wing mirrors before momentarily vanishing far out on the hot horizon, like the car plants, the company overalls, the jobs for life, the legendary square steering wheel of a paint shop, fresh Allegro. We're going to stay with childhood for a moment, and we're going to go back to school. This poem is called National Curriculum, and it's split up into various subjects, so I'm going to read you the first of those. This is history. At the revisionist tea party, we're invited to the crumbs from the tablecloth of industrial empire, death by numbers. War is an onslaught of terrible mathematics. Full-page diagrams in pastel shades formulate how many former students sleep in a foreign field that is forever. Sculptors forge a new iron repose of the tourist age to be mass-produced for the national mantelpiece out of iron railings and working-class saucepans. The miners' strike becomes a picnic with the police on the village green, illustrated by time-lapse pictures of coniferous coal lurking subterranean in a virgin seam. Maps become useless. Someone tows the whole collection of British Isles further out into the Atlantic and cuts it adrift. Sand. It began when you opened your desk and found everything gone, replaced with sand. You opened the wooden pencil case your brother had made, and it contained nothing but sand. Next, your books filled with sand, and the words began to wear away. Your homework was late because sand ate the sums and solutions. Study time vanished into the time it had taken. Sorry, I'll begin that line again. Study time vanished into the time it had taken to dig the sand from the library shelves like an archaeologist before you could find the reference books. When you were sent to fetch the register, the secretary poured sand into your open hands. At detention, you wrote out 100 times, "I must not lose the sand register," on the way back to class. You opened your door to the classroom and a dune of sand poured out that it was impossible to climb up. The taps in the toilets only gave you sand, cold, pale sand. Your running shoes were emptied of sand, but still the sand got between your toes and blistered your feet. Sand followed you home. I'm sorry, I can't quite see. I'm going to have to move this. I'm really conscious of stopping mid-poem, but I'd much rather read that poem from the start and read it really well for you. Is that better? Can everyone hear me? I'm so sorry. I just can't. There's a shadow over the book and I can't quite see as I'm reading. So I do apologise for starting again, but I'd much rather do that. Sorry. Sand. It began when you opened your desk and found everything gone, replaced with sand. You opened the wooden pencil case your brother had made and it contained nothing but sand. Next, your books filled with sand and the words began to wear away. Your homework was late because sand ate the sums and solutions. Study time vanished into the time it had taken to dig sand from the library shelves like an archaeologist before you could find the reference books. When you were sent to fetch the register, the secretary poured sand into your open hands. At detention, you wrote out 100 times, "I must not lose the sand register on the way back to class." When you opened the door to the classroom, a dune of sand poured out and it was impossible to climb up. The taps in the toilets only gave you sand, cold, pale sand. Your running shoes filled with sand, and the sand got between your toes and blistered your feet. Sand followed you home, waited at the bus stop, filled the back seat of the coach and slid down the aisle when the driver braked harshly. Sand lurked through the weekends, bank holidays, every day of the half-term break. Sand accumulated on Sunday evenings and came down on you in a storm after tea, filled your sheets with a million tiny silica jibes, made it impossible to sleep and got into your dreams. Even there, when the other children laughed, the sand blasted your face and clogged your throat. The shop floor gospel. Angry, he who trudges the grey, dog-eared estate avenues, a rasp of "I bloody told you so" on their lips. Fortune teller, free agent, laughter in grubby canteens. Mark my words, we're a living museum. There's no future, we're sold, sold out. Decades blowing a coarse wind through the resistance where no borders were left to cross, no other line to join, only holding out against some kind of new that pacified the absences with retail parks. You are the lone no on the shop floor, the habitual reader of all the wrong news, the public library ghost, the vote cast for some old school that's long since closed, a vanished oddment, a piss in the wind, the autumn leaves laughing at a glib historian's reworking of the ladies not for turning, "I bloody told you so." This next poem was written at Ledbury 2 years ago when I was staying here in the summer of 2016. And it was a very strange summer. I came to Ledbury and felt after several weeks, you know, sort of, I think it was actually 7 days after the Brexit vote that I came here. And it was sort of a relief to come to Ledbury and sort of connect again with the world slightly, because I felt like I'd been living in a parallel universe for the week that followed. And from that kind of sense of where we were, this poem came about. I'm just going to have a small drink of water because it's quite a long poem as well. And when I was starting to write this poem, I started to think a little bit about how I would approach it. And from my notes and from a few bits of language as well, some old English, I really felt that that would be a good approach into this poem. So the two words I need to tell you about, one is hliaufeda, which means a shelter feather, to put a protective arm around somebody. The other is the title of the poem itself, Unweather, which comes from the Old English, meaning literally storm or unweather, unweather. Unweather, one. There will be nights like this, when under the dark sky's heavy knife, the dog comes to your heel and you both stare far off into the fathomless middle distance of 3 a.m. And there will be mornings like this too, when dread moves in you like botulism, as the little island tilts on its foundations, threatens to tip you and the seasick dog loose, lone along the burning ledge as the longshore drift carries a crumbling biscuit nation off to sea, and you'll have nothing but the words of an old song on your lips, the bones of a last meal to pick through, the ashes, ashes everywhere. Two. We need a new word for the name of the country I woke up in this morning. We need a new word for the theft of something indefinable but definitely lifted. We need a new word with which to curse the salesman of a shoddy nightmare. We need a new word for the sense of betrayal that smashes the pedestals of household gods. We need a new word for how we navigate conversations, feeling our way in to work out where the fractures lie. We need a new word for a nation that doesn't exist. We need a new word for how the bigotry in the mortar became the bricks and stones and broken windows. We need a new word for walking the grey streets of each new day with a mouthful of lime and ashes. We need a new word for the uncertainty of loss. We need a new word for regret. We need a new word for the new bad news. We need a new word for the ugliness of our new words. For shame, we need a new word for the shame. We need a new word for the fear. 3. Our tongues were made from sprechen, dicere, parle, mackled together with flints and flaps of leather, wolf pelt, sheepskin, grown greenly fat in the sun, pressed, stoppered in amphora and bartered, molten to lead in the crucible and poured into typeface punches, licked onto vellum, all carried in language's little sailboat. My tongue might have said larish, where now it says speak. Each leaf of English borrowed from a starry European library of tongues, library card now revoked, and the tongues rabbling and clattering through vowel and dialect and regional collateral like wonderful mongrels escaped from the pound, never to be returned, gifts we must carry behind our teeth, a chlau feather to drape on a fellow traveller's shoulders. 4. I want to take what my neighbour has. I want to take the car he has on his drive, which is newer than the car on my drive. I want to take the crockery and the food and the cool beer from his table. I want to take his workaday whistling on a frosty morning. I want to take the quiet pride of his smiling family, his carefree son kicking the football, switching lightly from left to right with the same easy slips between one language and another. I want to piss a stream of rural Britannia over their flowerbeds. I want to wave my flag, tell them they're not welcome, grind our differences into their face, pack their bags, send them back. I want a sepia empire with a post-truth currency. I want to scrub the star from the union, take down the blue from their sky. 5. I lost my country for the promises on a big red bus. I lost my country when somebody left the handbrake off and it rolled away downhill. I lost my country after its recall due to a manufacturing fault and then burst into flames. I lost my country to stop someone else enjoying it. I lost my country to a failure of the left, to an offshore account. I lost my country in the food bank queue on the playing field of Eton. Thank you very much. And I think austerity has been singly one of the most damaging things in the last decade to society and the way that we have treated people and put so many people into extreme poverty and particularly hunger and for children to not have food, I think is really appalling. This poem was written in response to a friend of mine who was out of work and was asked to work for free sorting dirty rags, which I thought was appalling, Victorian, shameful. And I kind of thought about our responses and what responses we have to some of these things and my own complicated answer to this as well. So this poem is called Shrug. Nothing happened for years. The concept of opposition clearly outmoded and uncouth. Automated text proclaimed, become a limb in our service economy, opportunities for electronic serfdom in all sectors of our growing waste paper empire. Reports revealed how plucky strivers sought soiled rags for the workfare team. The shrug became our national salute. in small scandals of stolen, littered lives, or en masse, the poorest slandered, the doorsteps of the status quo swept clean. We slumped at the headlines and hoopla and shrugged. Gone viral, even our selfies betrayed us. Looking inward at ourselves, infinite, at our own what to be done, unable to bite the hand that fed us, our national daily dish of lies, such cold, damnable lies. And that poem was also partly written with the Hillsborough tragedy and things like Orgreave in mind as well. I'm really sad to kind of have to add Grenfell to that list as well. Not all of my poems are political. I do write a lot about the Midlands and about place. I also find myself writing about animals in various ways as well. So this poem is called Dog, on First Being Named. They're wrong, of course, our owners who think they own us. Choice, an illusion out of their hands, quicker than a quicksilver whippet out the traps. But the name at least, and this two-syllable moniker, and the telephone manner with which you deliver it, is yours to give. A password for recall, bringing me to heel, and to your hand's peace offering, rubber nosing your scent to sniff out all the trails of your laughter and grievings, of daffodils and thunder, the wreck's muddy turf, thawing snow. From this first, it's your voice that cracks instinct, unlocks obedience, echoes through each leg-twitching dream, pursued across each field, you naming our bond, my wordless joy. Later, you teach the code words for how I must ask, lie, play dead. But it's my name I'll chase down, hounding to your cry in the long, overarm pitch of all the dog days to come. I'll read that one for Liz Berry. I remember reading it in a workshop group, and Liz and I both share a great love of animals, and particularly of small terriers. And I'd like to finish by coming back to the Midlands, I think. And coming back to place, it's formed such a big part of these poems. And the Midlands have been, to paraphrase Roy Fisher a little, they have been what I think with when I'm writing quite often. And I find so much within this landscape that inspires me, particularly my birth city of Coventry, which I'm very proud to see as one the City of Culture 2021. I hope it brings it lots of brilliant things. I'm going to finish with this poem. And it has a little epigraph at the beginning, which is from a play at the Belgrade Theatre in Coventry called One Night in November. And the epigraph is, you know, Wordsworth said of Coventry that it was one of the most beautiful cities in all of England. It is a pity, a great pity. I always used to think that's quite sad, but audiences always chuckle at that, so it kind of makes me feel a little better about it. Coventry is always the bridesmaid and never the bride, is somewhere to be sent, where you come to find your train of thoughts and miss the last train home, where things come to an end and the opening paragraph is rewritten, then lost, then bodged, where hope is exchanged for something a little less brash, like maybe or perhaps. An ugly, beautiful place that seeks someone to love it back, misses the letters you used to write and wishes you would call, preferring not to talk tonight of the masses buried at London Road, the dead car plants, assembly lines, rarely loved, much maligned, occasionally extramarital, a clandestine affair. Too old and worn out for that kind of funny business. Disgusted, outraged at the suggestion, and only needs a good architect to get rid of the dark roots. Wants you to know she didn't always look this way. Is going to raise a little soul and get herself back on that bloody horse. Thank you.
you so much, Jane, and thank you for starting that poem again so that we could enjoy it properly. I'm sorry that you had to. So next we have Liz Berry. You may well have seen Liz's first collection, Black Country, which won the Ford Prize for Best First Collection in 2014. If you haven't read it, you won't know that it's full of Black Country dialect. And I think that after you hear Liz read, you'll want to rush and buy it, because then you'll be able to read those poems and hear her voice and her lovely Black Country accent in your head. But look what else I've got. This is so new, it's not even out yet. It's published next week, but special things happen at Ledbury, and this pamphlet is available today at the bookstore, so that's a bit of an exclusive. It's called The Republic of Motherhood, and the title poem was originally published in Granter and has been shortlisted for the Ford Prize for Best Single Poem. So in September, we'll be crossing our fingers that it's second time around, you get lucky again. So in the meantime, please welcome Liz Berry.
Good afternoon, everybody, and bless you for coming out in this hot weather to sit in a hall and listen to poems. The Spiritualist Church. I've never spoken to anyone of this, the Spiritualist Church. Its squat brick body, the mossy wall where snails congregate in worshipful hundreds on wet dusks. Every day that first winter, the winter I thought would bury us both, I walked past that church in sallow light, carrying my son at my chest, my bones luminous with tiredness. I'd stand at the gates and read the inscription on the sign, light, nature, truth, drawn it into my mouth like anaesthetic until I believed it was a message for me to ascend like a dove through the red roofs or sow myself into the sod. When the snow fell, I thought it was snowing inside my body, milk turning to ice in my breasts, snow piling sullen in the crib of my pelvis, the air burnt my lungs, and I was back on a trolley in that mint room, frozen from the waist down, certain he was dying, that I was letting him die and they were cutting me open, when the sky was dolorous and fat with sleet, I stood at the gate and dreamt of begging them to take me in, to lift my baby from my arms and lay me down in a room of shadows so I could shut my eyes at last and the hush would cover me like a burial sheet and someone gentle would rest their palms on me, touch me with a light so staggering I'd be opened up, my soul rising from the x-ray of my skeleton like a white-veined moth, my body below, hollow as an instrument humming with voices, women in darkness, women with babies, down on their knees in smothering houses, standing on bridges, coats loosened to wings, all of them uttering, murmuring at once, I see you, now understand that love can take this shape, a dove plummeting through white-sleeved night, that this is a healing, a laying on of hands. This next poem is called Bobola, and Bobola is a really beautiful old-fashioned Black Country Birmingham word for a moth, a big moth. And what I love about the word Bobola, and in fact what I love about all dialect words, is that when we speak them, when we release them into the air, it's a way we can release the voices of those that we've loved that have passed. And that brought to my mind the beautiful myth about moths, is that they carry the souls of the dead back to us. Bobola. Bobola. Darkling herald. See her flower face on a waning moon and spake her name aloud to conjure the voice of one you loved and let slip through the wingles of death in the owl light. When loneliness shines through your bones like a bare bulb, she'll come for you. Little psyche bringing missives from the murmuring dark. She comes to all the night birds, the cuckoos, the thieves, the aldens and the babbies in their dim-lit wombs, the boy riding his bike up Beacon Hill, heart thundering like a strange summer storm, and the messages she brings in a slow, soft flight, too tender to speak of, too heart-sore, but this, I'm here, I'm waiting. The love that lit the darkness between us has not been lost. And here's another lovely creature of the Midlands. This is a little pigeon called the Birmingham Roller. And I've such affection for the Roller. If you've never seen a Birmingham Roller, it's a really beautiful kind of fancy tumbling pigeon that was originally bred in Birmingham in the Black Country, hence its glam name, the Birmingham Roller. And the roller performs this really fantastic trick. So when it's flying, it suddenly stops midair and starts somersaulting backwards and down. And there's always this sort of heart-stopping moment when you think, actually, it's just falling out of the sky. And then it swoops back up to join the rest of the birds in the kit. And as soon as I saw the roller, I fell in love with it because it seemed this perfect symbol, not just for the region, but more specifically for its language, because it's this really ordinary grey-looking pigeon, but it hides this very spectacular trick under its wing. The poem uses Black Country dialect, but probably the only word that's nice to know if you don't is the word donny in the last line, which means a hand, especially a little child's hand. Birmingham Roller. We spent our lives down in the blackness. Those birds brought us up to the light. Jim Sherrill, tumbling pigeons in the Black Country. Wench, you're the colour of our town. Concrete, steel, oily rainbow of the cut. Our streets are in your wings. Our factory chimneys, the plumes on your chest. Your hearts, the china our old girls dust in their tranquilment cabinets. Bred to dazzling in backyards by men whose arms grew soft as feathers just to touch you. To cradle you from egg through each death-defying tumble. Little acrobat of the terraces, we're winged when we gaze at you, gimmicking the breeze, somersaulting through the white breath prayer of January, and rolling back up like a babby's yo-yo, caught by the open donny of the clouds. And here's another creature, this time a horse. I've two little boys now. That's what I've been up to since I came to Ledbury last. And I spent a lot of time in hospital with both my lads, and there's a really amazing sound that you hear an awful lot on the antenatal wards, which is the sound of babies' hearts being monitored in the womb. And if you've ever heard it, you'll know exactly what I mean. It's really extraordinary sound because it's so fast, it doesn't sound like a human heart. It sounds like horses' hooves galloping. Horse heart. It's a stable in here. The sodden hay of broken waters. Each of us private and lowing in our stalls. while all night, from the monitors, the sound of babies' hearts like hooves, stumbling, stamping through our bodies into the high, wet grass of their lives. How reckless they are. Lost now, then again in snowy fields of static. Too fast, and they're gone. Too slow, and they might never reach us at all, but fall, heads crowned by vetch and dandelion, noses cold to the belly of earth. Oh, these hoarse nights, darkless nights, the endless running of the herd, fear a hoof upon my chest. I'll lie in my sweats and beckon you up, little horse heart, foal. Let my love be your paddock, your bridle, your trough. The Republic of Motherhood. Across the border into the Republic of Motherhood and found it a queendom. A wild queendom. I handed over my clothes and took its uniform, its dressing gown and undergarments, a cardigan soft as a creature smelling of birth and milk, and I lay down in Motherhood's bed, the bed I had made, but couldn't sleep in, for I was called at once to work in the factory of Motherhood, the L shift, graveyard shift. Feeding, cleaning, loving, feeding. I walked home, heart sore through pale streets, the coins of Motherhood singing in my pockets. Then I soaked my spindled bones in the chill municipal baths of Motherhood, watching strands of my hair float from my fingers. Each day, I pushed my pram through freeze and blossom down the wide boulevards of Motherhood, where poplars bent their branches to stroke my brow. I stood with my sisters in the queues of Motherhood, the weighing clinic, the supermarket, waiting for its bureaucracies to open their doors. As required, I stood beneath the flag of Motherhood and opened my mouth, although I did not know the anthem. When darkness fell, I pushed my pram home again, and by lamplight wrote urgent letters of complaint to the Department of Motherhood, but received no response. I grew sick and was healed in the hospitals of Motherhood with their long closed isolation wards and narrow beds watched over by a fat moon. The doctors were slender and efficient, and when I was well, they gave me my pram again so I could stare at the daffodils in the parks of Motherhood while winds pierced my breasts like silver arrows. In snowfall, I haunted Motherhood's cemeteries, the sweet fallen beneath my feet. Our Lady of the birth trauma, Our Lady of psychosis, I wanted to speak to them, tell them I understood, but the words came out scrambled. So I knelt instead and prayed in the chapel of Motherhood, prayed for that whole wild fucking queendom. Its sorrow, its unbearable skinless beauty, and all the souls that were in it. I prayed and prayed until my voice was a night cry, and sunlight pixelated my face like a kaleidoscope. Come slower, so slow. Come cuckoos, come wenches in the jack squaling eve. The parish lantern is rising in the cut at Old Turn like a dishel of cream, and the boats are rocking so slow, slow, slow. Come sweethearts, come lads in the bobowling dusk, Let your tillers grow idle and trust yourself to the singing black cut where the osses are nuzzling so slow, slow, slow. Come lovers, come babs, along the towpath now hid with black medic and clover to lay yourself in. Cowslip, yarrow wild as a bed where the wind is moaning so slow, slow, slow. Come again, love. Again, love. Slower. So slow. Early. There are times we're like new sweethearts, awake through the shining hours, close as spoons in the polishing cloth of dawn, or sombre winter mornings, the terrace a diorama, bare poplar, yellow window, a woman rocking a baby in her arms. I tell you things I've never told another creature. Strange lullabies like the purling of larks winging up into the withdrawing dark. In the early light, every line I wanted to write for you seems already written, read, and forgotten. So I sing the secret part, my true one, of being born again as you were born, of kissing your mouth in the hospital, lovesick, cut, stitched, undone, and forgiving you for everything your sweet love would thieve me of. And I'll finish with a poem called Bird. When I became a bird, Lord, nothing could not stop me. The air feathered as I knelt by my open window for the charm, black on gold, last star of the dawn. Singing, they came. Throstles, Jenny Wrens, Jack Squallers swinging their anchors through the clouds. My heart beat like a wing. I shed my nightdress to the drowning arms of the dark, my shoes to the sun's widening mouth. Bed. I found my bones hollow into slender pipes, my shoulder blades tufting down. I spread my flight greedy arms to watch my fingers jeweling like 10 hummingbirds, my feet callousing to knuckly claws, as my lips calcified to a hooked kiss. Silence. Then an exultation of larks filled the clouds, and in my mother's voice chorused, take flight, chick, go far for the winter. So I left girlhood behind me like a blue egg and stepped off from the window ledge. How light I was as they lifted me up from Wren's nest, bore me over the edgelands of concrete and coal. I saw my grandmother waving up from a fold, loop the infant school and factory, let the zephyrs carry me out to the coast. Lunas I flew, battered and tuneless. The storms turned me inside out like a fury. There wasn't one small part of my body didn't bawl, until I felt it, at last, the rush of squall thrilling my wing, and I knew my voice was no longer words but song, black upon black. I raised my throat to the wind, and this is what I sang. Thanks so much.